The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This being Pod Yourself, The Wire, the world's only The Wire podcast, I first have to ask you the question I ask every guest. Do you like The Wire?
It's okay.
When you pod to the garden, gotta pod your back. Well, I beg your
pod. Pod. Straighten podcast. The track. Podcast with Jesus is gonna say the newsroom. You gotta keep a fake serial killer pod down in the hole. Season 5.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself, The Wire. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire and talk about it. Addendum. What's up, everyone? This is our first addendum episode of Pod Yourself The Wire.
Addendum.
There's something there.
We'll workshop it. Fix it in post.
But yes, so we're doing some, we're all done. We've done every rewatch of episode of The Wire. We've seen them all. We've talked about them all. And now we're doing a general overview of it. You know, what
we
happened?
Just thought to ourselves, we haven't talked enough about The Wire.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, we've talked for an hour and a half for each one-hour episode of The Wire, but it just doesn't...
Sure. Was there a parody song of every single episode of The Wire? Yes, there was. Yes, there was. But still, we felt the need to really talk about it just once or twice more times, depending on how we're feeling. But yes, so today, our guest, and we have a wonderful guest, they are a world-renowned critic, I would say, for the Rolling Stone magazine. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, please welcome back to the pod, Alan Sepinwall.
What the fuck did I do?
Off to a good start. What you did
He did a McNulty.
Yeah, what you did was come back on the podcast, and we appreciate it. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm great. It's been a while since I've had an excuse to talk or think about The Wire, so this is nice. Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Do you remember
Matt,
it?
You know, it cheapens it when you say world-renowned critic, and then you say, I would say after. Like, you added an unnecessary qualifier there.
I feel like you should have just let it ride. I was worried that, you know, I was like, if I overstated this, I don't want it to sound like I'm making fun, you know what I mean? But this is, you know, in terms of critics that people know the names of, I would say that, Alan, you're on a short list. You know, it's like people know Alan Sepinwall. They know, of course, Vince Mancini.
Don't cheapen him again.
Yeah. And what is it? Who's that one that I always see on the Peter Travers? Is that a guy? Did I make that up?
He was the film critic at Rolling Stone for a long time. He is retired now.
Oh, retired. Set out to pasture. He's critiquing, different puddings at old folks home. No, I don't know. I don't know how he's doing. I'm sure he's doing great.
I think so.
Great. Do you get a Rolling Stone pension? Is that a...
I think we have a 401k.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way things are now. You really got to hope that economy stays strong. But Alan, you're someone who has written extensively about The Wire, I would say. And by that, I mean you reviewed every episode. In fact, you had a couple different versions of your reviews, if I remember correctly. You had a veterans edition and a newbies edition. Isn't that right?
Well, what happened was when I started doing my old blog, What's Alan Watching, which is now also coincidentally the name of the Substack newsletter I do, The Wire was going into season 4 by the time I did this. And so seasons 4 and 5, I recapped as they were airing, for people watching as they aired. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, it became a summer tradition where I would pick an old show and I would recap a season of that over the summer, because this was back in the days when there wasn't a lot of original summer TV.
That's right.
And I eventually did all of the first 3 seasons of The Wire. And this was back when I had a really robust comment section before, before it became don't read the comments anywhere ever.
Right. Yeah. And before it just, links in bio for porn websites.
Exactly. And for the sake of the people who were watching the show for the first time, and this was a show where not a lot of people had watched it originally, and so there were new viewers coming to it all the time.
Right.
I felt, all right, I will write one recap that can be read by anybody. And then at the end of it, I will add a bunch of notes that are referring to things that happen later, and I will post them separately. So if you're a veteran, you can read that and you can sort of see allusions to stuff coming up. And if you're a first time viewer, you don't have to worry about that. And you can have a discussion with fellow first time viewers. And I still get email notifications if anybody comments on that old site. And yesterday I got 2 of them, both from people saying, I'm so happy that these are still here. I'm watching the show for the first time right now.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's
the year of our Lord 2024, and those still have value. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we get the same thing here where my favorite kind of email we get is the one where it's just no punctuation, and they just go straight into something that we said while talking about the Sopranos 207 that they didn't appreciate, and they they have a bone to pick with it, and I'm like, oh, well, okay, someone's still listening to that. That's good.
Well, I've written a bunch of books that are essentially recap books, and those, I sort of take things I've written previously and spruce them up, or in some cases write a lot of new things, and it's always this tough challenge of you want to be able to say to someone who's never seen the show before, buy it and this will be your excuse to finally see it.
Right.
But you've got to sort of try to satisfy both constituencies at once.
Yes.
And I think I've managed to do that, but I don't know. Maybe someone who knows Sopranos intimately or knows Breaking Bad intimately may sometimes feel like I'm over explaining stuff, but you never know. Everybody watches TV on their own schedule now.
I like that what you described is us. It's literally the opposite of what we do, which is we piss off the veterans and the newbies are mad that we do spoilers. we're how can we do this the most wrong?
Look, if we all did things exactly the same way, people wouldn't need more than one of us.
That's right. Exactly. We needed to find our niche, and our niche was serving nobody and just serving ourselves.
Good
no
on
gods,
you.
No masters, no money.
That's we right. No gods, no masters, no money. I'm getting that tattooed. So I was, really excited to have you on because you also wrote this great, this great 20 years later article about The Wire, in which you really went into The Wire at 20 and the kind of the impact that it had, not just on, the TV watching public, but more on the TV creator side and the way that people have tried and failed to do The Wire, and how it's almost an impossible show to recreate. And so I wanted to talk about that, but this being Pod Yourself The Wire, the world's only The Wire podcast, I first have to ask you the question I ask every guest. Do you like The Wire?
It's okay.
Okay, sick, 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 sick.
It's, you know, it's a perfectly cromulent show.
Yeah,
it's cromulent. If you like that sort of thing, sure.
Yeah, yeah. If you're into, you know, shows about drunken Irish cops, you know, then it's the show for you.
Well, I mean, I hear that the drunken Irish cop is not, in fact, the main character, but the city is the main character.
Yes, the city is the main.
I've never heard. I've never heard that before.
But it leads me to my next question, which is like, is your favorite character the city? And of course, the city is, you know, as we all know, New York. Is New York the main character?
Well, I mean, it's the main character of the very final scene of season one, I suppose.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
No, yes. Favorite character's hard. I mean, if I say Omar, I'm just being a basic bitch. I mean, that's the obvious answer.
It's my favorite thing to ask people because it's just like everyone has almost the exact same reaction, which is like, I want to say Omar because it feels like correct, but it's so obvious that I can't say Omar.
I mean, look. I'm not going to overthink it. I could name like a million other people. I could name the Bunk. I could name. I mean, does Fuzzy Dunlop count as a character?
yeah, I think so.
If Baltimore does, then surely Fuzzy Dunlop gets in there.
He appears in multiple seasons of The Wire and is an integral part.
Integral.
How do you pronounce it?
Integral. There you go.
Yeah. All right.
Or integral. You can say it either of those two ways, I think.
Yeah. An integer part of the, you know, the downfall of Herc and his job. So I feel like Fuzzy Dunlop is a totally valid character to love.
But no, I mean, it's Omar. I'm not going to overthink it. It's Omar.
Yeah.
So when you were writing about The Sopranos, like you sort of came at it from the perspective, an insider's perspective of living in New Jersey. Were you able to do, was The Wire more of a stretch being about Baltimore or, yeah.
I mean, I'd watched 7 seasons of Homicide: Life on the Street, which was based on David Simon's book. And so, you know, and I had friends who lived in Baltimore, and it became one of those things where it's like, I didn't really know Baltimore nearly as well as I knew suburban New Jersey, but I could pretend like I did. I'm like, I've seen, you know, 130 hours of television set in this city and specifically dealing with the Baltimore Police Department. Oh, I know everything. And obviously I knew very little. But the funny thing about that is, I remember at the time when season 5 debuted, this is coming after season 4, which at the time was like the most praised season of television in the history of television criticism. And like the show is being celebrated for being Dickensian and especially for being like so realistic and capturing everything so perfectly. And then David Simon set season 5 in a goddamn newspaper and suddenly every single TV critic in the country who back then were all working for newspapers like, no, that's not right. That's not right. He's getting this wrong. He's getting this wrong. Wait, could he be getting other things wrong too? And we just didn't notice.
Maybe he is not God.
Was that like his Michael Lewis moment where it was like, oh no, he got this thing wrong. We're going to have to go back and reread the blind side.
I think it's more like, you know, you give him too much credit because I don't know nearly as much about the inner workings of, you know, a Baltimore PD narcotics unit or an inner city middle school or any of those things. But like my wife works in healthcare administration. She cannot watch a hospital show because she would just yell at the TV the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, see, I mean, I haven't worked at a newspaper in 20 years. I've never worked in like an official newsroom like that. But as someone who works in media, it feels very like there's a lot like sure, there's maybe the finer strokes don't hold up. But in terms of the broad strokes, it feels very prescient and accurate in a lot of ways to me, at least season 5. What did you have specific thoughts that, you know, big that you thought he got wrong? Sorry.
I don't feel like there was anything big. My main issue with it was more A couple things. One, season five just doesn't have as many episodes, and you can feel it. You can feel them sort of rushing a lot of plot points to squeeze them in, especially because you're now adding this extra world to the show. Like in previous years, when you add City Hall, or you add the docks, or you add the middle school, it doesn't feel like it's trying to do too much. Somehow it's able to service all those. This year, you add the newsroom and you do fewer episodes. That it becomes a bit of a problem. And the other
plus, if it's going on, there's the idea of like maybe they'll get to it later. But when you add like a finite ending point, it's like now you know they're never going to get to that storyline.
Right. Yes. And then the other thing is, and I feel like I would have felt this even if I didn't know David Simon and even if I didn't know the issues he had with the Baltimore Sun. But it does feel more score settling than some of the other stuff that happens in previous seasons, you know?
Yes.
Maybe, but boy, am I a good audience for score settling with your former publication at this point in my life.
I can't,
shout out to Will I Am.
Yeah. Maybe, the next season of Pod Yourself, we can, somehow settle the score with the folks over at Up Rocks for you, Vince, you know? Is there a way we can settle up on
money?
Yeah, I could,
give
me money. I guess continuing on with this idea about like season five and kind of like season five, we found in doing this rewatch was probably, I think it was easily the most polarizing season. It was easily across the board one in which people had no problem saying that even upon rewatch, they didn't like. Whereas season two has had kind of, it's been reexamined. Like you'll have people who will take the position of like, they'll admit they hated it when it first happened, and then they rewatched the show and they found it to be one of the best seasons of The Wire. What are your thoughts regarding season five and what about season two?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a key difference, which is when season two came along, we were not expecting season two. Right. Like the idea that suddenly the Barksdales would be so completely sidelined and now the antagonists would be a group of like, you know, predominantly white, you know, blue collar workers at the docks. The setting would be so different. The type of antagonists would be so different. Like, this was shocking. And on top of that, you're feeling, okay, well, where's Stringer? Where's Avon? Where are all these characters?
Where's
Bodhi?
Wallace?
Well, we know where Wallace is, unfortunately. But, you know, where are all these characters with whom we were deeply invested in from season one? Why are we now spending time with all the Sobotkas? And why are we seeing Ziggy's dick so much and all of that? And I think, but as you keep watching the show, you begin to understand, one, this is a thing the series is going to keep doing. Suddenly you're going to have politicians, then you're going to have school kids, and eventually you're going to have newspaper reporters. But beyond that, you're going to get back to the Barksdales. You're going to, you know, Stringer is going to be huge in season three, and unfortunately only in season three, but you know what I mean? Bodhi is going to stick around through season four and have one of the more memorable deaths on the show.
That's right.
Can I spoil the show? Or in the last episode? Just making sure. You know, you're going to get all those things. So if you go back and you watch it, you can see all of the things that season two is doing well. And I think it's doing almost everything incredibly well. I think it's one. I mean, it's hard to say it's one of the best seasons of the show because the first four seasons are pretty perfect in a lot of ways. Season five, I think, is still great. It's just more flawed. You can see the seams a bit more than that. But I think the other reason why, so there's the reasons I already talked about why it maybe sticks out. And the other is just, it's indicting the audience a little bit because like the whole point of season five is, you know, I've pointed out all these systemic problems in urban America. Now I'm going to tell you why nobody else knows about this.
Right.
Now I'm going to point out the fact that the news media is failing you just as much as, you know, all these other institutions are failing the citizens, you know? And so I don't really think it plays like scolding, but it could certainly feel that way. And so I get it on that level.
I also feel like there's a sense of the makers of the show learned from season two. Like they got the reaction and understood that it was jarring to just drop you into a completely new setting with new characters. And I feel like they introduced all the new environments a little more slowly in the next few seasons than they did in two, where we're just like, oh, boom, here's Ziggy and Pablo Schreiber now.
And the other things, honestly, I feel like, And again, this gets back to the notion of score settling. I think the Tom McCarthy character, he's named Scott Templeton, right?
Yes, yep. That's right.
The idea of like centering it on a fabulist and on his two like awards hungry editors feels kind of cheap and feels like the kind of shortcut that the show didn't do in other areas. Like, you know, David, Simon and Burns always like to talk about like, this is not a show about corruption, even though there are a few corrupt characters here and there, you know, but it's a show about sort of institutional failings.
Right. Yes.
And so this, you know, it's never about, oh, you get rid of the one bad cop and things will be better.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Templeton is not exactly the one bad cop of the newspaper, but he's kind of close.
He's as close as the show's gotten. And I completely agree. It is something that
but he had bad editors and a bad business model. Like he did have those things.
Yes, but if the premise of the season is that management of the Baltimore Sun is too focused on the wrong things, you know, like they're steering people away from covering drugs, steering them away from covering schools, trying to do more things to keep the suburban readership, etc. And as a result, their coverage of this stuff is really suffering. I think that feels more true to the show while still getting across all the points Simon is trying to make, rather than him bringing up this one guy who wrote the series about asbestos for the real Sun years earlier.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. So I was interested in something you said. You said something about The Wire season 4 getting praised for the Dickensian aspect. Like, was that storyline in season 5 like a direct response to what he thought people were praising earlier seasons for, and maybe like wrongly?
Maybe. I mean, David Simon is kind of the king of saying you're watching my show wrong. And there was a lot of that over the years. And to the point where, while I think almost everything he's done since then has been great, he has really run away from some of the things that make The Wire the best of anything he's done and one of the best shows of all time, which is The Wire is an eat your vegetable show, but it's like it somehow has baked the vegetables into like a plate of fried chicken or something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's like you're getting the things you need, but you're also getting the delicious taste. You're getting the adventure. You're getting the larger than life characters like an Omar, like a Stringer, like a Bubs, all of that. And the later shows, I don't want to say feel like lectures because he's too good a storyteller for that. But there's definitely less pure entertainment in those. Mm-hmm. And so getting back to your question, I do think like there's a degree to which he feels like, you know, the Television Critics of America went so nuts over like the structure of the storytelling rather than focusing on the actual subjects that the show is dealing with in terms of the school system and the courts and everything else.
But like, hey, maybe don't hire 5 acclaimed novelists to be your writer's room if you don't want to get praised for your storytelling structure.
Yes.
So going back to the David Simon's post The Wire output, like of his shows, you got Generation Kill, Tremé, Show Me a Hero, The Deuce, The Plot Against America, We Own This City. You know, what are some of your favorites? What did you feel about some of those shows?
I really like Tremé. It sort of took a while to grow on me because that's like really just like an atmosphere show. Like there's barely any story to speak of. And it took me a while, I think, to adjust to that.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, it's just like, okay, here is a prestige hangout drama. And I like that. And I think there are some moving moments later, but it's pretty messy. I think The Deuce is incredible, but it's also, like, in hindsight, hard to get past the Franco of it all. Like, I don't know that that's one that I'm probably going to be revisiting.
The Deuce is, like, my favorite of those. And, I mean, I get the problematicness of James Franco, but if they would have put 4 James Francos in that show, I would have been, like, cool, because I was into it. And the later seasons prove that they didn't really need him, but, I love that show.
That was good. I mean, We Own the City was like the first one where it really felt to me like, okay, this is obviously I made another police show set in this city and it got praised for all of these things. And now I'm going to strip all of that stuff out of there. And so it's like, just here are all the things that are wrong with, you know, the war on drugs with a lot of great actors and all of that. But it's like, it's not, I don't want to say fun, because, but I guess parts of The Wire are fun in spite of all the things you're learning.
Yeah. I found We Own the City, and this was true of the book too, just straight up hard to keep track of. Like, it does not introduce anyone in memorable ways. It just throws like a ton of characters and a ton of facts and jumps around in time. And you're like, I'm sorry. I love the acting in this show, but I am lost. Like, I have to watch that show like three times.
You reminded me of the Fractured timeline. It didn't need that. It didn't need basically two separate framing devices.
Right.
You know, with like the parallel police investigations. It's just like, if you're going to do it, just tell it straightforward. That's okay.
Yeah.
Especially with that much stuff and that many like specific events going on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a crazy story. The guy that John Bernthal plays, like the scam that he was running within the Baltimore Police Department was wild. But I don't think, like, as a show, they didn't land really.
I mean, the only issue I had with it, other than the, like, you know, framing device, obviously, like two, and then also just the way in which they told the story of the officer who may or may not have killed himself. Like, I love watching Jamie Hector be a detective who's not Marlowe. But I felt like
they kind of turned him into Daniels. I mean, didn't turn him into, but like, that's what that character kind of is.
Yeah. Except
Daniels,
for the,
like,
you know,
he has
suicide
stuff
part.
In his, well, yeah.
Well, do either of you guys watch Bosch?
I just started Bosch.
I've always meant to, and I never.
Just started it because
you just had a kid, so it's like it's the perfect dad show.
No,
so you're now
I'm ready
eligible
for Bosch.
To watch it.
I'm Bosch ready.
I just bring it up because, you know, Eric Overmyer, who wrote on The Wire, is the showrunner there.
That's right.
It's one of the few shows that's able to pull off that whole novel for television thing and not have it feel tedious.
Yes.
But also he brought in a bunch of people from The Wire. And so Lance Reddick is, again, like the head of the police department.
Yeah.
And Jamie Hector is playing a detective there, too. And it's a very similar, like, performance to what he does.
Yes.
And We Own This City. Like, not in a bad way. It's just sort of like, okay, it's he. We know him as Marlowe, but he's really good at this other thing, too.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm enjoying him on Bosch so far. But I think just the issue I had was with the storyline, the way they told the story of this officer, and kind of like just upon further reading about what happened there, and kind of like it felt I don't know. I didn't like the way it was played. But beyond that, I feel like with We Own This City, what I enjoyed about it was the fact that it was telling a it wasn't trying to be The Wire. So I feel like I hold it to a completely different standard than I would say like any other David Simon show. Whereas like the Tremé was.
That's the only like non-starter on the list. That's the one where I like tried to watch it and I was like, I don't know what's happening.
Tremé
I am falling asleep.
I get it.
To continue your, you know, vegetable metaphor, Tremé was just like, have you tried raw vegetables? And I like.
Also, you like my in-depth breakdown of a city I lived in. What about one that I have not lived in?
Yeah.
Like, what about one that's like completely on the other side of the country? Okay.
And there was just, there's something about Tremé that I almost like, I feel for David Simon a bit, because I don't know how, you know, if you follow him on Twitter, but it's the one show he brings up more than any other show that he's done, which is, you know, basically every once in a while between calling someone a shit heel or, you know, whatever compound swear he comes up with, he will just be like, one day someone will appreciate Tremé. And I feel bad because it is, the one show in which I feel like he, I'm going to be honest. I liked, I would say like 2/3 of it, I thought was pretty strong, but I would say that like, you know, it's not his best. What is it?
I will
about,
have to go. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to ask Alan, what is it about Tremé that you find, interesting other than it being purely vibes based entertainment?
I mean, I think that's a lot. I mean, it's very good vibes and it's some terrific performers. It's also like, this is back from in the days when I recapped a lot more stuff than I do now. And so I was not only watching every week, I was writing about it every week. And I think sometimes that can change your relationship with a show. And I was really thinking deeply about every episode and every character and every arc. And I don't think I've watched any of it since then. But like, I go back and I think about it, and I, you know, I think about like there were particular moments, especially later on, where it would be that David Simon kind of thing, like Bub's running up the stairs.
Right.
Bub's running up the stairs and the door is open to his the rest of his sister's house. That is such a small thing. But because on The Wire, they have put in all of the work.
Yes.
It's like it's a miracle. You're sobbing. A guy runs up the stairs.
Yes.
The Treme has a lot of that by the end where it's like if you've been sticking with it that long, suddenly like the smallest goddamn gesture has incredible meaning. And obviously, like, you got to sit through a lot that doesn't make sense to you at the time. It's definitely it's the most impenetrable at the start, I would say, of all of his shows by a pretty wide margin. And there's some characters I just never liked. There's some characters who it took a really long time for like them to grow on me. But I don't know. I just and I like the music. I don't think I can explain it better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. It's fair. It's I think just for me, it was one of those things where I was like, maybe if I liked New Orleans music more, I think I would enjoy it. But it was for me the first time I was like, I guess this is just a genre of music that I find to be grating.
I guess I enjoyed Generation Kill more the second time around. That I didn't remember liking it as much as I did when I went back and rewatched it. I think that's like the most different maybe of all his shows.
Yeah,
I will just always have a soft spot for that because there's that in-laws joke in the last episode where Lee Turgeson tries running Serpentine.
Oh, I have to rewatch it to remember what happens.
It's okay. So have you ever seen The In-Laws with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Okay, never mind. It's incredible comedy. It's one of the funniest scenes in movie history. And there's a scene in the finale of Generation Kill where Lee Turgeson is like under fire and he's running in this ridiculous fashion. And all the Marines are looking at him like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. And he's like, I was trying to run Serpentine like Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
So that's a joke for like five people, but I was one of the five.
Yeah, I feel like there's a few that like that's going to have to be in my Wire related homework along with watching The Wild Bunch finally, because I know that Simon was putting references into every episode.
I think that's the only homework he ever gave Michael Caneth is like watch The Wild Bunch.
Now I need to watch it, but will I rewatch The Wire again? Probably. To get back to The Wire,
The Wire. Yeah.
This is a show about The Wire. And listen, it's a show about television in general. Sure. At this point, this episode is about David Simon, but it's also, most importantly, an overview of everything that happened on The Wire. I'm going to just do a 3.5 hour recap of everything that happened on The Wire. I want to talk about seasons. Do you have a season that you think, like to you, sticks out as probably the best season of The Wire? Do you have a favorite?
I think it's 4. I think, you know, anybody who wants to say like 1, 2, 3, or 4, I get it. They're all incredible in different ways. I think because the central characters of 4 are kids, it hits harder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like just the scene where Randy is in the hospital after, you know, the firebombing and, you know, Carver comes in and is trying to give him the pep talk and Randy just stone stares him and yells, "You're going to help me, Sergeant Carver?"
Yeah.
Over and over again like that. Even more than like a lot of the deaths, that's the most like devastating scene on the show, because you watch the beginning of that season, you think like, God, look at these 4, you know, happy, you know, fun loving kids. And Randy is sort of the most, I don't want to say relatable, but like he's the one who sort of aspires to just like, you know, I'll have my own business, I'll have a nice house, etc.
Yeah.
And so like,
he's the one white people have been trained to say like, oh, that's a good kid.
Exactly right. That's exactly
and
right.
And he's the one who I think I related to the most because I would also snitch.
I didn't. He was too entrepreneurial for me.
That's true.
Like,
yeah. No, but if put in a position in which the police are asking me questions, I also would believe the right thing to do is to trust the authority, you know, especially at that age. And that ends up, you know, biting him in the ass hardcore. So, yeah, it is the most tragic storyline, I think, because it's so relatable.
I mean, if anybody who calls The Wire propaganda definitely did not watch season 4, because I mean, the whole arc of that season is that you should not trust them.
Hey, everyone, Matt Lieb here. Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? Not like around, you know, the block or whatnot. I'm not saying have you seen, run into him at your local grocery store. I'm saying, have you seen what his body looks like? He is still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. And what's even more shocking is he somehow looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, and yes, I have started drinking it. Why? Because they sent me some. And honestly, I've never felt better. My digestion is smoother, my body looks leaner, and I have energy all day. I feel younger, even though I am a young man. I feel even younger, bro. Like, if you know anything about me, you know that I'm someone who is obsessed with gut health, all right? You know, I drink kombucha. I like a probiotic drink. I do all sorts of things to make sure that my gut is healthy. And I'll tell you, this is actually great for your gut. And it actually tastes good, which is not something you can say about kombucha. Let's be honest. And another thing I loved about it, easy to prepare. I love that it's just something you just mix with water and stir. I didn't have to, like, you know, learn to make a culture from a SCOBY or whatever. Like, I just had to buy some Morning Kick, mix it with water, stir it, drink it down. And it tasted great. So if you want something that tastes good, makes your digestion feel smoother, and make your body look leaner and give you more energy, try Morning Kick. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. One of the things I like to do when I would do these recaps is I would, especially for the seasons I had already watched in their entirety, is to like track the like chain of events that has to happen in order for some great tragedy to happen.
I reread a lot of your reviews before I would watch the show, and that was that would always be the part where it was like it felt the furthest from anything that I would ever do, but also like the most impressive because you had to remember all the like narrative events along that chain, and I was like, holy shit, boy, I could not have kept track of that.
And it's been a really long time since I've seen season four or read any of those recaps, but like I do remember the chain of events required to like destroy Randy's life.
Yes.
Is really impressive even by Wire standards. Just these weird coincidences and accidents and mistakes.
Yeah, it's Seinfeldian, but not played for comedy.
Right. No. Completely. It is like the darkest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm you've ever seen. Yes. And yeah, that I believe, you know, just to recap those chain of events. I mean, off the top of my head, it was because of the fact that Randy was the one who little Kevin told to tell Lex to go to the playground. And then
he was the one who saw Randy sexual activity in progress because he happened to be between classes because he was trying to sell t-shirts to a section of class that was not his.
Right. And then because those boys decided to be mean to the girl who they paid for sex for after the fact, she then claimed assault, and Randy was the one who was seen by the bathroom and then was blackmailed into essentially snitching on the murder of Lex. It's like, this is,
and it's also that Carver feels bad that he's left Herc behind.
Yes.
And so rather than calling Lieutenant Daniels and saying, hey, this kid might be useful for you, he gives him to fucking Herc.
Yes.
And
the show's biggest doofus. And of course, had Bunk gotten the message that Carver tried to give him, it might have been all fine, but Bunk didn't receive the message because another detective was mad at him for questioning a previous murder.
Yeah. Yeah. It's everything. It's everything.
It's so incredible the amount of, you know, it's one of the things that I think separates the show from every other show is... there's no one evil doer. There's no
one.
Yeah,
and by the way, like, I just want to be clear. Yes. Like, this is not, at least for me, this is not us trying to do auteur theory. I don't think for a second that David Simon or the writer's room planned all those things out meticulously from the beginning. I think they were just planting seeds and improvising based on what they had. And, you know, like, I'm sure there was some like architecture and outlining going on, but I think most of that grew out of just sketching compelling characters and then thinking about like how would these people act in the situation and then going from there.
And I do think, you know, trying to get the message across of how, you know, why you don't want to be in the system and why the effects of institutional rot upon a marginalized group of people who you keep telling like, hey, you need to trust the police. And then this is what happens when you do so. It's pretty great.
I also think, you know, we talk about season five being sort of an indictment of the media. I think like the show in the years since it sort of functions as an indictment of the entertainment industry because this show clearly gave us so many amazing actors who were so good at like doing strong material. And like, by and large, the entertainment industry has failed to give like 85% of these actors like
anything
comparable roles.
I mean, it's Idris, it's Michael B. Jordan, who is barely on the show, and I don't think you can really credit The Wire
Bodhi. Bodhi's so fucking good in the show.
But it's just the two of them, and it was Michael Kenneth Williams, and I mean, other people work, but I don't think you could say anybody else got a substantial bump out of being on The Wire.
Andre Royo, like Andre Royo in The Wire oral history that I read, that not the one Alan wrote, sorry Alan, but the oral history, Andre Royo was talking about how like really people in entertainment are so dumb that they really just thought like he was good at playing a drug addict because maybe he was like a drug addict.
Right,
and he hasn't gotten like the level of work, even though he's like a central character in the show and just like displays an incredible range of acting throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. So to continue on
and
with...
David Simon had a quote about that too, which I also agree with, which was like a lot of things don't get awarded because... like the awards like to they like to reward people that get glamored up, you know, that show like this sort of like it's very obvious entertainment, and a show that was as realistic as The Wire, even though it got praised a lot, it got hardly any Emmys compared to how good it was.
It didn't get any Emmys.
It only got 2 nominations ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
According to Jim, has more Emmy nominations than The Wire.
Well, that is the second greatest TV show.
That is wild. Yeah. Like people just didn't recognize it for as groundbreaking a fiction as it was because they didn't recognize that it was fiction on some level.
And I think we were guilty of that too. When we started this podcast, or this, you know, this show, this season, I was like, you know, not really known for its acting. This show, you know, this show is mostly known for its, you know, the writing and, you know, social commentary and whatnot. But then once we finished all 5 seasons, I was like, the acting on the show is actually incredible. And I think it's almost like the way that the show is written and the way it's shot almost does a disservice to the acting because you can't really recognize it as acting.
I mean, I definitely think David Simon is didactic in a way that David Chase isn't as much, or at least he has like a more specific point of view that I think he wants to get across like politically, and maybe that cuts against it somewhat. But when you watch it, the acting, and part of that is just that they wrote every... The reason that we talk about The Sopranos and The Wire on a podcast is that we can talk about the characters as if they're real people, even though we know they're not, but they're written in such a way that you can say like, oh, you know, McNulty would do this and he would not do that because he's a person in my mind.
And it's not just the main characters. That was sort of the genius of the show, is sort of like every character... Even like someone's with like 3 lines, is those 3 lines are invested with so much like meaning and specificity that you feel like, oh, okay, if the camera were just to turn away from McNulty and follow this lady home, you know, for the next hour, that's going to be a really good hour of television.
100%.
Which is not something you get for, like, even The Sopranos, you don't necessarily get that. Like, even when you start going like, you know, the second tier captains or something,
fucking,
you know,
Monk and Spider. Like, I can imagine the interior lives of Monk and Spider. Like, that's how well that show was written.
Yeah. I mean, but I will say, when you specifically were like, turn the camera away from McNulty and turn it to another character, I was thinking very specifically of a black detective at Homicide who kept checking out Jimmy's ass throughout the entire, every time they were in a scene together, she would just look at him and go, and I'm like, I could watch an entire show just about her, you know, just her sexually harassing different men as she walks in and out of the office and through Baltimore. But I want to continue on, you know, talking about this idea of other TV shows and the way the effect of... I'm sorry, Vince?
I just have one stupid thing. One parallel universe to imagine, which is to imagine the parallel universe in which John C. Reilly played McNulty. Be a very different show, but I would absolutely watch that.
Oh, I'd still watch it. I mean, I'm sure it would have still been good, but... I can't. I literally can't even picture it. Is the thing. You bring that up because he did audition for the part, or he was. Yeah. He was. Yeah. That would have been.
Yeah. No. I think they offered it to him basically, and he was like, I don't know if I can do it schedule wise, and
Thank God for Step Brothers or whatever was coming out at that time. Or maybe it was Chicago. But I wanted to ask you something you bring up in your article, the Wire at 20 for Rolling Stone. You wrote about how other shows kind of fail to recreate the magic of The Wire. Well, I it's interesting because I want to ask about
let's remember some guys on other TV shows that weren't that tried to be The Wire and couldn't pull it off.
God. But I'm interested because I feel like I have a few thoughts about like shows that are doing a The Wire and or shows that people tell me it's like The Wire, and then I watch it and I go like, this is a show, this is just a cop show. Like, you know, so I want to ask, like, since, you know, the end of The Wire, there have been other shows that have attempted to recreate some of the different factors that make The Wire good. Is there any that you can remember that maybe tried and failed, or ones that you felt like they were directly trying to do a The Wire, but didn't pull it off?
Well, I mean, are you talking in terms of subject matter or in terms of structure? Because there's different ways to sort of slice that particular pizza.
Well, so like one of them, you mentioned, and this is just a quote from it. You said, we're making a 10-hour movie.
This is the bane of my existence, this phrase.
But I completely agree. And I feel like, you know, the way in which, and you mentioned this, that the show The Wire was largely, you know, when people talked about it, it's more like a novel than it is a TV show.
Yes.
And now people kind of do a similar thing where they go like, it's not TV. This is like, what if a movie was 20 hours long?
The Wire like was able to walk that walk in a way that very little else has.
Yes.
Like, you know, basically unless it's a show involving somebody who worked on this show.
Yes.
Or it's somebody who worked with like Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
You are not like, if you're trying to structure your show this way, you're not going to do a good job of it. I mean, I think that's it. I don't want to say it's a hard and fast rule, but it's very difficult. And Bosch is just a cop show. I just think it's it handles that whole thing well of individual episodes are not like distinctive, but like you watch 10 hours of it and you get a satisfying experience.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That does that, but there's not a lot. And it gets back to, in part, you've got one guy who did a lot of long form journalism in his career and just a lot of journalism, but also wrote for like one of the great procedural cop shows of all time in Homicide. And then he recruits a bunch of crime novelists to his staff and keeps adding to their number with each passing season.
Yeah.
And so you've got a lot of people in that room who understand, like, here is how you tell a big sprawling story like this and keep people interested from beginning to end. Even if, you know, you can't look at it and be like, oh, this is the one where this, or this is the one where that, other than, you know, the next to last episode of every year, which is, this is the one where the person you like dies.
Right.
Yeah. And also I feel like a lot of later TV, like they remember the part about The Wire where it was giving you your vegetables, but sometimes they forget the part where it was like dunked in cheese sauce and deep fried. Like they forget that it was tricking you into eating your vegetables. Like it was doing an art in order to do that. It wasn't. And I think Better Call Saul is an interesting example because that's like the only show that I can think of where there were scenes where I was watching the scenes and going, why am I watching this scene? But then I gave it the time and I'd get to the end of the episode and it would prove to me why I was watching that scene and make me feel good about it. Whereas most shows, they do that and I'm just like, okay, bye.
Yeah, no, it's they mistake slowness for patience and they're not the same thing.
Yeah.
It's The Wire moves slowly. But like at least at first, at the start of every season, and especially at the start of the first one where you don't know anyone or anything, but like it eventually builds to something where all of that time feels like well spent by the time you get there. Even, you know, by the time you get to the fourth or the fifth episode of a season, and especially by the time you get to the end. And a lot of these other shows just meander and meander and never, like, maybe there's better stuff later on, but you very rarely will look back and say, well, you know, I'm kind of glad they started there. I'm kind of glad they took their time showing this. Like, I don't know if either of you guys have watched Ripley on Netflix. That's another good example where, like, the first episode, about half of it is just, you know, Andrew Scott walking up and down stairs.
Oh, my God. It is. And like, you get the art of it, like yeah. the second time he does it, and you're like, okay, I get it. He's working very, very hard to, you know, at just the most of that show is walking slowly through
yeah.
Italy.
See, I was bringing up more as an example of the rare instance where that works.
Oh, you
I liked
it.
Ripley a lot. I liked it a lot. There's the third episode in particular, I think, is one of the great hours of TV in the last few years. But
okay.
No, but I there are definitely shows where it's just like, we're going to waste time because we can waste time because we assume, you know, we are on a streamer yes. where as long as we end our episode with a cliffhanger,
yes.
you are going to let the interface play the next episode.
Right, right.
And The Wire, not only, like, it often doesn't end on cliffhangers. Like, episodes just kind of stop a lot of the time, you know. But, like, and especially it could afford to do this back in 2002 when there weren't a million shows like it and right. there weren't a million different places to watch.
Yeah.
So it could trust on audience patience more.
Yeah.
But no, go Vince. I'm sorry.
I mean,
I think
there's shows that are probably good that I don't like. I tried to watch Foundation on Apple and like I watched like an episode and a half of it. And I was like, this seems like it's really good. And they're building a lot and they're doing so much. But then it's like every episode is like 60 to 70 minutes. And I was just like, I do not have the bandwidth to figure out where the show is going. It's overwhelming. And I am going to tap out.
There was a show on FX called Snowfall.
Right.
The rise of crack in South Central. I watched the whole first season. I thought it was pretty good. Not great. Felt very familiar. You know, felt very indebted to The Wire and a lot of other shows.
Yes.
You know, seemed to be moving fairly slowly. And I got to the end. I thought, well, this was okay, but I'm not going to watch anymore. And then, like, I would keep hearing, especially, like, when you got to, like, the third or the fourth season, people saying, oh, no, now it's great. And now it's great. And once upon a time, I would have taken the time to go back and watch the rest of it. And I'm sure it did get better. And that's wonderful. And I would have liked to have seen that. But it's just so much harder to ask people nowadays yes. versus back in 2002. Just wait. Just you
yeah.
wait.
Yeah.
And even with The Wire, by the time you get to the middle of the season, you're already realizing, oh, this is something special. You know, by the time you get Bunk and McNulty, you know, saying fuck over and over again at the murder scene.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I get this now. I know yes. what the show is.
Plus, there was just so many shows in like 2019. There were so many shows that if it wasn't like grabbing you right away, you're like, I can't watch this. There are like 14 other shows that people have been telling me.
Yeah,
to
and I've
watch.
Been burned too many times. And, you know, so like once you get burned by a show that people promise you it gets good, you just your patience wears thin. But, you know, Snowfall is an interesting example of like I've heard the same thing. People say you got to watch Snowfall. If you like The Wire, you'll love Snowfall. And I just have
people get mad that Snowfall is not mentioned with the same reverence that the Wire is for the people that really like that show.
And I feel like I get into this thing with, you know, people where. I just, at this point, I've come to just not trust anyone to know why, like, they like The Wire. Like, people have, I think, trouble maybe identifying what makes The Wire good. So when someone says something is just like, I watched the show Top Boy, which is set in England. And it is a people
wasn't about what you thought it was going to be about.
No,
was
I thought it was. Yeah, I thought it was about the best doggy out there, an adorable dog. No, it's the people said it's like The Wire, but in England, and it is about drug dealers. But it is nothing like The Wire in any sense. So when someone tells me now, oh, it's like The Wire, I just go, it's probably not, so I'm not going to watch it. It is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, it's you guys dealt with this for all the time. You were covering The Sopranos as well. It's like there are other mob shows.
Yes.
And maybe they're well-done mob stories, but what made The Sopranos special was it was like a million different things in
yes.
addition to being a mob story.
Yeah.
This is a cops versus drug dealer show, but that's like one small slice of it.
Yeah.
You know, and if it was just that, it would still be really good, but it wouldn't be like greatest show of all time consideration.
Yes.
It's that it adds all of these other layers in terms of social strata, in terms of theme, in terms of everything it's doing, in terms of the number of different stories and kinds of stories being told.
Mm-hmm.
And so if something's a really good drug epic, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I would probably enjoy, you know, a really well-told one if I got to it, you know, sooner, if I had more time for it. But like, just being a really good drug epic in and of itself does not make you like The Wire.
Right. Yes. And I feel like even David Simon himself did this with, I mean, to me, like Show Me a Hero was like a brilliant show, like brilliantly acted, fully realized portrayal of like a city in decay, but like it didn't have any room for hope. Like people talk about The Wire being bleak, whereas like to me, Show Me a Hero just lacked that one little kernel of like having some room for hope, that it was, so it wasn't just like sort of a bleak slog. And got to the end of Show Me a Hero and I was like, well shit, I might as well like just turn the bath on and drain and
throw this toaster in.
Yeah, and throw this toaster in it. Like, holy shit.
But yeah. Well, so we only have a few minutes with you left, and I want to get to an important question, which is, you know, you brought up The Sopranos. What's better?
Heard of it.
Wire or Soprano? What's better?
Okay. Once upon a time, I would have said The Wire. At the moment, I would say The Sopranos. But I've also much more recently watched all of The Sopranos and written a whole book about it.
Yeah.
Whereas the last time I watched, it was probably like a decade since I watched any of The Wire, you know, more than like scenes on YouTube.
Right.
And so, I mean, some of it's recency bias. Some of it is, I think, you know, being first bias. I think that the shows have different strengths. I think The Wire is a much more tightly told narrative. Mm-hmm. Sopranos is much more meandering and digressive. I think the depth of characters and the depth of like great performances on The Wire is a lot deeper.
Mm.
But Jim and Edie, like, there, I don't know that there's anything on The Wire that touches what Jim does on Sopranos.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything anyone's done in television that touches what Jim has done on The Sopranos.
And I think The Wire is funny, but I don't think it's Sopranos funny.
Right.
No. I mean, the funniest Soprano, like, I still to this day, like last night I was using a Sopranos meme on somebody. I do that all the time. There are definitely Wire memes that are useful, but not to the same degree.
Oh, yeah, not even close.
And memeability is not like the mark of a great show or anything. I mean, just in terms of like, there are so many funny moments that I find can be relatable in everyday discourse.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It is probably the most memeable show that's ever made. And is that correlated with it also being the best show ever? Who knows? Time will tell.
I mean, the other most memeable show is The Simpsons, which is also way up there. So, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Now, maybe we've hit on
maybe
something.
Maybe there is a connection between great shows.
If I ever do a sequel to TV, the book, we're going to have to add like a memeability ranking to it to help determine the order.
I mean, I think You Should Leave has to be in the conversation there because boy, does that have practical applications.
We have to
even
see
more so than me like laughing the first time I saw the sketches, but someone will just, you know, remind you of the guy who can't park or the guy who is trying to order 55 shakes and 55
tacos. I mean,
tacos.
We're all trying to find the guy who did this. Yeah. Is the most single useful line of television, possibly in the history of television. Yeah.
Or just the other day during the Trump trial, where they're dismissing jurors because, you know, they call them like an orange cock knocker or whatever on Twitter, and Trump's just sitting in the room. Immediately, you think of the guy with the hat with the court transcripts being read about how stupid his hat looks.
Throws the dice, tries to hide it under someone else's chair.
So
this has been I Think You Should Leave podcast.
Yes,
excellent.
Yeah. And brings me, I think, to our final question, Vince, unless you have a follow-up. But the final question is, we are trying to figure out what is the next show that Pod Yourself will cover. And we feel like there's a lot of different factors that go into it. Oh,
can
Vince,
I name my top three?
Please, please.
Okay, my top three are Mad Men, The Deuce, The Leftovers.
Those are top three.
Yeah. Okay.
My top three: Downton Abbey, The Leftovers, Mad Men.
Okay. I mean, do I get to break this tie? Like, how much in sway do I have over this decision?
Almost
here?
None. But I would love to hear what you
just want
to
know. Yeah, we want to know.
I just
want to
know what you think.
You
know,
it, yeah.
if you were,
I mean, it's the leftovers. It has to be the leftovers.
Interesting.
And not just because I don't know if you guys have seen this today. Someone sent me a link to this. Elon Musk is talking about like potential like new features for the Tesla, and one of them might be like. You sit in it and it like scans your balls.
Oh man.
In order like to know whether it's you driving as an anti-theft measure.
Is there going to be another button that allows me to kill another one of Mitch McConnell's sisters in it?
But I'm just saying like, you know, I heard that and I immediately thought, oh God, it's the penis scanner from like Leftover season 3.
Yeah. Oh man.
I don't even remember the penis scanner scene in the Leftovers.
You
but,
see that?
It's when he's the president.
Yes.
And the president and the international assassin in the same episode.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know, just you bringing up the fact that that is a thing that happens on the Leftovers is a reminder to me that like, yeah, there is a reason why I said we should do the Leftovers. But
I also find that like in terms of like the best opening title sequences, I think the Leftovers and the Deuce are and they both had like different ones for different seasons that were like they somehow surpassed each other. Unlike The Wire, which was just like sort of diminishing returns with some of the like theme song.
Yeah, the cover
changes. The Leftovers and the Deuce both had incredible, like the Blondie one and the Elvis Costello one are
both
so good.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's given us a lot to think about. We're gonna be asking people what show is next, but we're putting one down.
Look,
for
all I'm saying is you would get to talk about Nora Durst for like hour after hour after hour.
I know.
Why would you want to deny yourselves that?
I
is there another actress that just like shreds as consistently?
I know.
As Carrie Coon, like
she's perfect. And in fact, it's like, you know, if it weren't for the existence of Downton Abbey, I would be like Gilded Age. Maybe we should do that.
Yeah. Yeah. What if Downton Abbey, but with Carrie Coon in it? And you're like,
Yeah.
That's like those shows are so totally not my speed. And yet I've watched every episode of Gilded Age for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's the best.
Yeah. And the guy from The Plot Against America. Like he.
Love that
I don't know
dude.
I don't know that he shreds as hard as Carrie Coon does, but he has something about his face that I just enjoy watching.
Yeah, I like, you know, he's a swarthy, ambiguous-looking guy. I'm not sure, you know, what he is.
We stan our ethnic whites.
We stan our ethnic whites. I thought he was they were a Jewish family for like the first half of the first season of Gilded Age, and I was like, oh, that's why everyone's treating him that way. Nope.
they're just new money.
They're
how
just
dare
new.
They?
Yeah. I was like, oh, all right. Well, I don't relate to that at all. Alan, thank you so much for joining us. If you had to give The Wire a letter grade. Between B+ and B+, what would you give The Wire?
Well, I mean, if those are my options, I'm going to give it a B+, obviously.
Surprising. Okay.
I'm just saying, if I can give it a grade between B+ and B+.
That's right.
I have to choose B+.
I'm making you choose B+, Alan. There's no
But
other
if I'm my own man.
If you're your own man.
A++. There you go.
That is 4. Wow. Was that 4 pluses?
It's at least 4.
4 out of 5, though. So that's like a solid B+ in terms of pluses.
You're going to get me aggregated here. This is not going to go well for me.
No, it won't. Alan, thank you so much for coming on and talking about The Wire with us. Anything to plug? Where can people find you? Where can people find your work?
All right. You can find me, obviously, at Rolling Stone. I'm on all the different socials at Seppenwall. I've got a Substack called What's Alan Watching, you know, which has links to all my stuff and some sometimes shorter things that I don't that don't merit a full article in Rolling Stone. I've got a lot of books out. If you love The Wire or The Sopranos, I've got a couple of books. One's called The Revolution Was Televised, which is sort of like the origin stories of those shows and all the other great ones from the 2000s that sort of led to the modern TV golden age. I've got one called TV the Book, which ranks the 100 greatest shows of all time. Both of those, you know, you will be shocked to find rank fairly highly. My current one will obviously be, you know, completely in the wheelhouse of this, which is an oral history of the 2000s Fox teen drama, The O.C.,
ooh,
called Welcome
See,
to the O.C.
I suggested that as one of our, that was one of my rewatch suggestions, because I feel like there's a lot of rewatchability to The O.C.
But the thing is, two things. One, you're going to be committing to doing that forever.
Right.
Because, like, yes. First yes, season alone is 27 episodes.
Insane.
And then two is, once you get, like, if you make it through seasons one and two, season three is rough. Like, it's really, you're going to have a heart. Like, I researched a lot of this book while I was in the hospital. And I will say, like, the only way to make an extended hospital stay worse is to have to watch The O.C. season three while you're in the hospital for a couple of weeks.
Did the doctor ever come in and be like, you got to stop?
Why are you doing this? You're like, so your readings keep going down. I don't understand. Like, this medicine should be working by now.
Oh, man. Well, what is the name of the book about The O.C.?
It's called Welcome to the O.C., The Oral History. I spoke to everyone from the cast, mm-hmm. you know, the creative team, a lot of people. It was a lot of fun. I never done an oral history before. And it was also nice to be able to revisit that show in both its greatness and its stupidity mm-hmm. over the years.
So check that out. And check out Alan's other books. He's written a lot of great stuff. Alan, once again, thank you so much.
It is always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
Yeah. All right.
Take care. I mean, only The O.C. had a water polo bully whose dad turned out to be gay. That's all I'm saying.
Nothing better than that.
It's as much of a trailblazer as The Wire, when you put it that way.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/Frogcast for the bonus episodes. Frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. There will be a few more episodes of this before we do come to a conclusion on what our next show will be. But until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah, bitch, this is a show about The Wire. And it's also about putting out some fires. It's about war on drugs and the war on terror. It's about lots of things, but it's also about cool guys who sell drugs to their friends and their thugs. And everybody seeing all the things going on and no one doing nothing. And no one's ever gonna win, and the war won't end till everyone tries heroin. It's about schools and people who work at the docks and people who teach in schools and the newspaper guys at the end, and also about drug dealers and also about drug users and also about McNulty getting a divorce from his wife. He's not a dad, and also he is bad at not drinking a lot, and also this show is about politicians. It was Obama's favorite show. Sucky, 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 yeah, bitch. HBO The Wire, bitch. HBO Max, I guess. Number one TV show to Barack Obama. What's that say about what Obama likes? It either means that he has good taste, or it means that he watched the show and decided to not do anything when he had the power to change things. But whatever, bro, that's fine. I wouldn't have done it neither. Probably I'd be too scared to do it.
Suck it, 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 suck it. Sucky, 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 on dick. Licky, 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 on clit. Sucky, 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 fucky, sucky, 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 fucky, sucky, 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 suck my dick. Omar. The Wire. Matt Lee. Vince Mancini. Brent Weiberg. David Simon, come on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.